This podcast is a TOEFOP production.
Head to TOEFOP.com for more.
The following episode of TOEFOP is rated MA for mature audiences. It may contain sexual references, time travel references, allegations of bin misconduct, and mild coarse language. TOEFOP advises that this episode is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15 or anyone who thinks a comedy conversation between two old mates sounds like a terrible idea for a show. Minors must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. This is John Deek speaking.
Everyone relax, this is TOEFOP. I'm Charlie Clawson.
I'm Will Anderson, hello, and thank you for watching.
And Podcast Mike has no idea what episode we're doing. It's sort of that been that couple of years, doesn't it? Like, you know, it's not just like what episode of TOEFOP is. What day is it? What week is it? What month is it?
Time means nothing anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
I think this is why we're having so many once-in-a-lifetime weather events. Mm. I don't think it is climate change. I think time is collapsing in on itself, and, like, time has lost all sense of meaning. Like, I can't believe – so I'm at the Melbourne Comedy Festival at the moment. By the time that people hear this, it'll be over. And I remember when it got cancelled in 2020, and that feels like 10 years ago to me.
Yeah.
And it's been 2 years. It can't be 2 years. And yet at the same time, you're like – like in the last 2 years, everything has happened and fuck all has happened.
Yeah.
And I can't distinguish any of it from each other.
Well, I'll give you even a more stark dichotomy. Last time we spoke, I'd just seen Midnight Oil at Blues Fest on Friday night and had a fantastic night. It was great and I was re-energized. A mere 2 days later, I went to Blues Fest and had the complete opposite night. Like it was... If Friday night, the Midnight Oil night was like, you know, a great festival experience, I had the complete opposite experience. And to use...
Because on Sunday you went to see Daylight Solo, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And weirdly, they have very right-wing politics. Like you'd think from the name they'd be really hippy-dippy, but they say a lot of mean and horrible shit.
There was a weird energy. Let's just say this. So in sporting parlance, I was managing my minutes. I'm not a young spring chicken anymore, so I couldn't do like the full 4 days. I had no intention of doing the full 4 days. Would never camp. Like that's completely off the table. But I live, you know, 20 minutes drive from the festival site. So... Mm-hmm. Jem and I decided we'd buy tickets for 2 days with the two bands we wanted to see. So Crowded House were the headliners on Sunday. And I would have thought that like, okay, Midnight Oil, Hoodoo Gurus, that's the big like, you know, party Friday night, you know, night at the festival. And then Sunday seems like the bit more of the mellower kind of one. But I don't know.
I mean, that makes sense. Like that makes sense in what you're saying. In a programming sense,
yeah.
You've got these huge rock and roll like heavy
almost
guitars,
punk, you know,
but also sing along anthemic, like, you know, sort of, you can imagine people literally moshing to bands like Midnight Oil and Hoodoo Gurus, whereas you can't really imagine people going, here's Four Seasons in One Day and rushing to the mosh bit.
Well, I don't know if it was like Crowded House specifically or who else was on the bill. I mean, the first thing I'd say is, it was so muddy, like by day three of the festival, like it was so uneven. And I was taking
– Oh, has it been wet up that way?
It's just a bit of water. Just a bit of groundwater. By day three, it was like full on, you know, just mud pit. And so the ground was very uneven. And what I didn't anticipate was because the festival site is so big. And so we went in early. We took Iona in for her first festival experience, you know.
Yeah.
And that was – that was an omen because Iona missed her nap and we went in sort of late afternoon. And when toddlers miss naps, what you then have on your hands is like a ticking time bomb. Sometimes it can go fine, but other times you are dealing with like a feral animal that just you cannot contain. It, you know, it's nothing makes it happy. Everything makes it angry. And you're just in constant sort of like putting out spot fires left, right, and center.
Well, what you've done is you've skipped a couple of steps. You know, you've taken it not to her first festival. You've taken her to her first last day of a festival. Like, and she's like, she's got some real last day of a 3-day festival energy going into the final day.
Yeah, That's 100% right. It's day three of camping. All the drugs are gone. She was feeling really, really shitty. So we get in and we as soon as we got there, like, because it's so – we first of all, we took the wrong entrance and so we parked on the complete wrong side of the festival, then had to do this 20-minute hike to get to where we needed to get in. And then once we got in there, she was just like, no, I don't like any of this. I don't want to see anything. And so then as a parent, you start going like bribes, okay, ice cream, face painting. So, but it was so packed. Like I actually would have, I thought Friday night was busy, but Sunday was even busier. And I, again, I don't know who the lineup was, but it felt like it must have been a younger, like more hip hop or dancey, because it was just heaps more of that young kind of, I don't want to say stereosonic energy, but there was a lot of that stereosonic energy like happening, which I was completely taken aback by at Bluesfest. Just seeing those kind of like those kind of dudes and those kind of girls, you know, milling around at Bluesfest. And so the only place we could go to calm Iona down was this face painting tent. But there was a, like everything, there was a huge line. So we get into the line, and Jem and I are taking it in turns just to kind of like just. Like a little princess, just sedate her with like toys and trinkets and ice cream so she wouldn't flip out. So we finally got her face painted, got her an ice cream. That seemed okay. She saw a bit of John Stevens and Noise, well, not Noise Works. I think it's John Stevens doing the song, the hits of Noise Works and NXS, which I only seem to like. She seemed to enjoy a bit of reach out and touch somebody. And then Jem, the plan was Jem was going to take Iona home. We had friends staying. She was going to get us settled and Jem would come back in and meet me. Mm-hmm. So we'd been there for a couple of hours and I hadn't really seen anything, just been sort of walking from one place to the other and then seeing like a little bit of John Stevens and then back to the car to get Iona back in the baby seat and see Jem off. And then so finally I've got like an hour or two to myself and I'm like, fantastic. Like, let's just go see some acts and, you know, go to the bar and all that kind of stuff. But hiking all the way back in the bar, I get a text from a friend of mine, a publicist. He's like, oh, hey, a friend of mine has this like wildlife foundation. They've got a tent there they'd really love if you could go and just take a photo with them and put it on Instagram. So I'm like, yeah, okay, oh, no problem. Where is it? So it's by this stage. I look at the map. It's on the complete other side of the site. So I'm like, fuck. So I'm like, could at least grab a beer or something? So I go, no, but the lines are too long. So I'm like, I'll just get this photo done and then I'll get to the bar. So I trudge like all the way to the other side of the site and I'm like, where is this like animal sanctuary tent? Like, and she's like, it's near the whatever stage. And so I'm circling the stage. I go through every stall. I can't find it. And then obviously, because it's a festival, you're trying to text, but you're not, it's like spotty mobile coverage and I'm texting her, where is it? And she's like, oh, yeah, I think they packed up. I'm like, oh, great. Oh, great. So they packed up. I mean, that would have been useful information 2 hours ago. Great. No problem. So then I finally get in to get a drink and our mate Semi Cav.
I mean, it clearly means that they weren't really hanging out for that photo.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah, totally.
Like the photo wasn't that important in the first place. If they were clearly not willing to wait around for another 15 minutes, they're like, we're not ruining our day at this excellent festival. We're going off to see John Stevens. What are you talking
Fuck
about?
Fuck the Wombats. They've had it too good for too long. So
we're going to see the band, the Wombats. That's what we want to see.
So finally I meet up with Sammy Cav, and he's there with a couple of mates. And so I can't remember who was playing, but it was some kind of like funk band or something like that. And we've got this other friend, Josh, who's very distinctive. He's got long, straight, dark hair, you know, and always wears like a baseball cap. So we're sort of texting back and forth, meet by this tower at this, you know, at this proximity to the stage. So we're sort of going to the crowd and it's really, really busy. And I hate that, you know, you feel so bad when you're sort of like squeezing past people to kind of get to like a fairly indeterminate, you know, location. But then we see Josh and I'm like, oh, great. I could see the dark hair and the baseball cap. And so we squeeze right up. We go right up to this guy, tap him on the shoulder. Not Josh. Absolutely not him. But like from behind, a complete double. So then we're like, all right, let's just get out of the crowd. So now we have to squeeze all the way back. And we end up on the side of the tent where the support, cables are, you know, holding the tent up. So we're standing there, pretty good in the point of view, watching bands go by. But a lot of people are walking past and not seeing the cables and tripping. So Sam, being the good guy that he is letting people know, hey, look out, there's a cable. And so this girl is walking out, you know, away from the stage and Sam's like, hey, watch out for the cable. And her boyfriend, Stereosonic Dude, just jumps out and shoves Sam. He's like, don't fucking touch her. And Sam's like, what? And then he's like, I'll fucking smash you. And then like everyone's like, whoa, dude. Like, no. He was, and then like this dude cocks his fist at the entire crowd. Like he is willing to.
At the crowd.
Like he's going to punch.
I'll punch you all. You all stop looking at me or you will all get this fist of fury. Each and every one of you. What? Literally a guy waving his muscles at a crowd.
Yeah, like literally like when, you know, those Green Lantern comics where he'll just generate a giant fist and swing it at like a crowd of bad guys. Like I've never seen anything like it. He literally like backed away from the crowd with his fist cocked, like daring someone to come near him. And like, wasn't just Sam. Like, there's about 20 people in the area who are like, "What the fuck just happened?" Like, clearly, you're just saying, "Hey, watch out."
Do you reckon he knows where to get some ice?
Ice and steroids in strong supply wherever he's come from. And so that sort of like put a bit of a kind of weird like energy over. It's like, okay, it's not the blues fest I'm used to, or the even the festival experience that I'm really used to. Like,
no, it's Byron Bay getting in a blues fest.
Exactly right. So. Then, the sun goes down. Gemma's texting me. She's on her way in. I'm like, okay, cool. At this stage, I still really haven't seen anything because it's been like toddlers having tantrums and then dudes threatening to punch my friends and then, you know, mistaken identities like trying to. So it's just been all that. It's been like hours of that. Finally, Gemma arrives. So I go, I'll line up at the bar when she's 20 minutes away. And that way, by the time she gets here, I'll have some drinks. So Gem arrives, gives her a drink, and then we go because Crowded House are about to start. So we meet up with our friends and Sam and a couple other guys and Josh, and Crowded House start. And Josh turns to me and goes, "Don't you think Neil Finn looks like Margaret Pomerantz?" I don't know if you've seen his hair lately, but he's got that kind of spike.
It's a boof.
Yeah, but it's that spiky, silvery, and I swear to God, it ruined the whole gig for me because I'm just like, he looks like Margaret Pomerantz. I'm just waiting for him to turn to David and ask what he thought about the previous song. Like, I didn't like it, David. I felt like there was the chorus wasn't strong enough and the chords were just a little repetitive.
Well, wouldn't it be great if Crowded House did it David and Margaret style? So they do their set, but then someone comes out and refutes the lyrics. So, you know, like, yeah, you know, so he does a bit of, you know, Four Seasons in One Day, and then it goes over to someone else and go, well, to be honest, it's really hyperbole. It was more like three seasons in that one day. He's added, like, it wasn't really like summer at all. It got a bit warm in the afternoon, and I really don't think this can be justifying the title Four Seasons in One Day, but that's just my take.
Yeah. And so, to be honest, it was just after seeing Midnight Oil, it was too mellow for me. I was actually just getting a bit bored. I'm like, oh, look, you know, I appreciate this, the musicianship and the songs and everything, but just not really into this. So I went back to the bar and started chatting to this couple, friends of friends, and it was all good. They were getting on really well. And then it took a hard pivot into anti-vax territory. And I was like, oh, I had just enough to drink and just enough medicine that when it steered, that I was like, you know what? I've had a pretty shit night. I'm willing to get into this. Let's have a chat. Tell me your views. Like, let's find out what your point of view is. And so
interesting.
And because one of the girls was German or something, and she said, well, in Europe, you know, they didn't shut the borders. Everyone traveled normally, and I think that's you know, personal freedom is more important. She's got, and we've got kids. I think it's damaging them to see people wearing masks, not natural. And I said, yeah, okay. And I said, well, look, no one's saying there's a perfect solution to what's going on right now, but, you know, we're trying to mitigate the risks. And I guess at some point you sort of have to weigh off, is the potential lack of development of children not seeing, you know, people's faces constantly, is that better or worse than a pandemic spreading out of control across nations and with open borders? And they'll
also, people are seeing people's faces. This is the argument, like, that always is like, oh, well, you know, everyone's wearing masks. Everyone's not wearing masks. There's never been a time where everyone wore masks.
Yeah.
Like, some people have worn masks. At some times it's been more people, and now it is much, much less people, much, much fewer people. But there's never been a time where, like, if you had a kid, you'd be like, yeah, my baby's two, never seen a face. It's just not happening. That is not a realistic scenario.
Yeah. Well, in their mind too, because then the next thing they pivoted to was, well, we're getting forced to be vaccinated, and that's just that violates human rights. And I said, no one is forcing anyone to get vaccinated. And he's like, yeah, but I can't work specific jobs unless. And I said, yeah, but there's tons of jobs where you have to have specific qualifications before they will let you do the job. I mean, that's, you know, that's pretty standard, right? Like, you know, I would like to fly an airplane. I can't just fucking like fly an airplane. There's certain things I have to qualify for, certain amounts of training, certain things I have to do. And then he was.
I have a job. My job, you know, without going into too many of the details of, you know, the requirements of these sort of jobs, but every year for Gruen, I have to get a full medical before we do the shows, and I have to make sure that all my vaccinations are up to
date.
Like, that's been happening.
Fascism.
It's been happening for.
It's your fault for yielding to fascists, clearly.
I actually thought it was just to protect the people that I work with and their jobs and mortgages and lives and families.
I mean, you would have thought it was just like a public health issue at the moment, and that maybe. Because that was the other thing, is then they've gone, oh, well, we've both had it and it's fine. It's just like a cold. And I said, well, that's great. I said, I've got a friend in the hospital at the moment because they caught COVID and the virus got into their spine and they don't know if he's going to walk again. So I'm really glad that you guys are okay and you think it's nothing more than a cold. And then 3 days after Blues Fest, I start getting the sniffles and I'm like, fucking hell, man. I was like, if me arguing with those anti-vaxxers gave me fucking COVID for the second time, I've tested myself twice in the last 3 days. I don't have COVID. But it was just like, oh, man, it was night and day. I had such a great time on Friday. And it was my own fault because even on Sunday, I was umming and ahhing about going back in. It's like I had a really good night on Friday. And this is where I trust myself implicitly. Even when I was a younger man in my 20s, I had a very good off switch. Like when all my friends, including you, were like, yeah, fuck it. Why don't we go another day? It's day two, day three. Why not? I was always very good at going, you know what? We've had some fun. I think it's time for me to retire. I'm just going to raise the bat. I know it's maybe not the coolest thing to do, but I'm going to retire. And I had that same feeling where I was like, I've had a great first day, memories for a lifetime. I can leave it there, but I just got too ahead of myself. And then it was just everything conspired to make it a terrible night.
I mean, it does sound like it was one of those things where, like, firstly, maybe day three just wasn't the right day for Iona. That was the mistake in the first place. I feel like actually it even goes back to the mistake you've made with the car park. I feel like this whole day got off to the wrong start because, like, you'd understand if you parked in the wrong spot and went to the wrong gate if you hadn't been there 2 days earlier.
Yeah.
But you'd literally been to that place 2 days earlier. You probably should have known where to park to get in the front door, right? Like the whole day was cursed from the minute you arrived is what I'm thinking.
I think – I can't remember. I think maybe I drove in day one and Jem drove in day two. So it wasn't exactly that. But, yes, you think we could have figured it out. But it's very – like once you're in there, it's just – in that car park area, it's not very well posted. Like we, at one stage, we ended up driving into like the staff area until they turned us around. Like we were like the worst, most cliched kind of tourists. You'd think we'd never been, to Blues Fest before, but it was, look, on the balance of things, it was good, but it was just that one day. And I think if I had just not, if I had not trudged around, if I had just sat in one spot, it would have been fine because I would have avoided all those conflicts. I would have avoided, like, you know, seeing that guy try to punch Sam. I would have avoided the anti-vax conversation. Like, I should have just sat in the VIP tent and just, like, although I could have done that at home, which is initially what my instincts were telling me.
Well, here's, okay, so there's a couple of things. Like, firstly, the lesson for Sam is don't help other people.
Yeah.
Clearly, just let people trip over the cables. Not your business, mate. Not your business, not your occupational health and safety. Like this is – Sam's done too many official gigs at proper companies where he's like, this is clearly an occupational health and safety risk. I'm going to have to step in here, be a little safety monitor for this area that I'm now standing in and it's my responsibility. Whereas like the rest of us are like, oh, well, fuck it, cords. People can work it out or trip over. That's the end of it. Let's move on. The fact that you were – seeing some funk band? Did you say it was in the middle of a funk band?
Fat Freddy's Foot? Fat Freddy's...
Oh, Fat Freddy's Drop.
Fat Freddy's Drop, I believe, yes, was the band
on
the time.
Okay. Do you remember the Dead Kennedys?
Yes. GLO.
They had a song, and a very a big song called Too Drunk to Fuck. Do you remember that song?
Yeah, vaguely, yeah.
Do you reckon there's ever been a funk band? Podcast Mike, could you please look this up? Like, has there ever been a funk band called Too Drunk to Funk?
That's good.
Because if there hasn't been, that is a good name for a funk band, I think. So I need to know whether there is. I imagine out there in the world, there's got to be a funk band called Too Drunk to Funk.
Well, I know that Five had a song called Slam Dunk the Funk.
Oh, my God. The 95th Five restaurant. I listen to you talk to Claire Tonti as well on Fofop, and I'm like, Charlie is, like, will not stop talking about Five.
I'm done.
He's actually, you are deep into Five in a way that I don't think anybody else in the world is into Five.
Oh, absolutely, but it's done. Like, I even said that. Like, it was one of those things where you get, like, a taste for a certain chocolate bar or a certain snack or whatever, and you just eat it until you fucking hate it. I'm done. I'm done with Five. I mean, thank you to everyone, by the way, who sent me Five's dates, because they are touring Australia at the end.
Oh, really?
At the end of the year. Yeah, I don't think they're coming.
I mean, should we go and see Five when they tour Australia?
Mike?
Is there a chance that we should have a little TOEFOP team trip and we should all go and see Five when they tour Australia?
I mean, that could be an amazing bonus episode if we went and saw Five. I mean, I reckon we could get in to speak to them. I don't think that would be particularly hard for us to get Five.
Oh, yeah. They'd be like, yeah, there's this podcast that's really, like, there's a bit of heat around it, to be honest, mate. Like, the people are really, we're getting a lot of Google alerts. Like, people in Australia are talking about Five nonstop.
In a weird case of synchronicity, The Guardian wrote an article about Five this very week, which people have been sending me links to. And apropos of nothing, it's just one of those kind of like column pieces where it's like, do you remember the band Five? And this is what they're doing now. And it's like, that's weird that I was the first guy to talk about Five in.
Clearly, the Guardian are listening into TOEFOP and getting all their ideas.
You know what the sad part about that Guardian article was? Is reading it, I'm like, this is not telling me anything I don't know. Yet, like, I've heard all these anecdotes and stories before because my research has made me. I mean, if you're an expert in Five, what does that make you? Like a Fiveologist, a Five Spurt? Five Spurt sounds very dirty.
Yeah, you're a Five Spurt. Yeah, that's what I prefer. I want you to go on Hard Quiz. I want you to go on Tom Gleason's Hard Quiz and do Five as your specialist subject.
I wonder how I'd go. I reckon I'd do all right. I think I would. I think I'd do all right. I'd have to sort of research a bit more about their later career, because I know they have released a new album, which I have not listened to. But, yeah, it's getting to the point now. I've learnt all Jay's raps. So I think that's where I'm done. I feel like now that I've got Jay's raps memorized, there's no need for me to dig any further into Five. The only way I'd come back is if Jay and Abs were to return to Five, then yes, I would definitely I think a bit.
Oh yeah, for the Five reunion,
I'd be
too,
back on board. Having said that, they are playing I think it's like the Rudy Hill RSL. And something about that is like, fuck, maybe, you know what? Maybe we should go. If it's easy for us to go, would you come with me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll come with you. Yeah, I don't think you should go by yourself. I don't think that's a good
Mike,
look.
Would you come? If we got tickets to Five, would you come along?
Yeah, maybe. I love Keep On Moving. It's a great song. So to see
that. Yeah, it's a good song.
Okay. I love that Mike, by the way, so is there a band called Too Drunk to Funk?
I have found a Facebook page for a band called Too Drunk to Funk with 650 likes. Tantalizing function band spanning disco, funk, 80s pop in a diverse mix of floor-filling party tunes. And they seem to be based in like the east coast of England.
Someone fucking got them a thesaurus for Christmas, it sounds like. I mean, there is a chance that Too Drunk to Funk and Five have probably played on the same bill, it sounds like.
I mean, if there was a double bill of Five and Too Drunk to Funk, we would definitely go.
Slam
wherever it was in the world.
Too Drunk to Funk, that's what you'd call the tour.
I mean... it would be the too drunk to funk slam dunk tour. I think I would work
too drunk. Wait, so what is it?
The too drunk to funk slam dunk tour.
The too drunk to funk slam dunk tour. Yeah, that would be it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, let's stay tuned. I had a brief look at the dates, and it seemed to be, I think it was like four shows, and it was like RSLs in Sydney and Melbourne. Mm. I didn't see anything up in Queensland or definitely this area, but I mean, how much would it cost to get Five to come play at our house? Like, surely we could probably, like, if we Patreon leveled that, I mean, that's something we could try and do. If we got a private gig with Five, like, you've got space at your place. We set up a little stage. You know, we run a competition, like, on Patreon. You sign up to this amount. I mean, how much could it cost to get Five to play, like, don't have to do their full set, just, like, all the hits?
I feel like you, like, I think the easiest bit of this negotiation is getting it by Five. I think the hardest bit of this negotiation is getting it by Amy. So am I talking to her, or are you talking to her about the fact that we're going to have a concert by Five in our backyard?
Podcast Mark, I've got a new job for you. Win Amy over. Can you get Five playing at Will's place? Okay, look, we don't have to do it at your house. Mm. I mean, my place, I mean, you can probably do it. Just depends on how many people, like, off the top of your head, how much do you think they're getting for an RSL gig?
Oh,
300 people paying, what, $30 a head?
Look, you're probably getting
10 grand?
20, probably 20.
20. Oh, that's a lot. It's more than.
Because the RSL clubs, they still have a bit of money because they're trying to get people there to gamble. Like, so it's not like a regular venue.
Responsibly.
Yeah. Well, no, they don't want them. They might say that. There might be posters that say that, but they absolutely do not want them to gamble responsibly. They want them to be lured in by the appeal of three of the original members of Five and then spend the rest of the night, like, filling up the pokies. That is actually what they want.
Well, maybe that's the there's got to be a
maybe I should put some pokies in at home. We can put a few pokies in the garage and then we can start doing concerts in the driveway.
Well, I guess maybe I'm putting too much onus on the TOEFOP audience to raise funds.
No, no, no. I think it's just about us going to see Five. We need to see Five. We don't need to see Five in our environment. We need to see Five in their environment. We need to see who else is like us there. Is it just old fans of Five who followed them, or are there people like you, Charlie, who didn't get into Five the first time around necessarily but have rediscovered a real love and passion for Five? Like, it might turn out it's just a bunch of, like, middle-aged men.
What do you think would be required for Five to let me do the J-Rap and everybody get up? Like, how do we make that happen? I'll be the resident president. I'm the fifth element. Jimmy Flass, Nooka Stone Cold, how I'm hitting them. Do you think they would, like, what would it take for them to go, yeah, we'll let this guy come up and do Jay verse?
Is the guy who does that verse still in the band, or is he one of the guys who's
No, left? Jay. That's what I'm saying. It's the Jay verse. Jay's, we don't know where Jay is.
Okay.
Is Jay okay? Hashtag is Jay okay.
You know what? Are you okay, Jay Day? So. okay. Yeah.
By the way, further to my research, I recently saw an interview that ABS did. ABS is in a new band, which is like, it's all the bad boys from a couple of different boy bands. Mm. Like, I think it's Guy from Boyzone and stuff like that.
We're all a bit rough. It's the Suicide Squad of boy bands.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he released a rap. It was like a diss track where he dissed the other members, the remaining members of Five. Like, it's sort of like done in that kind of Stormzy kind of, what's that called? Grime? Is it grime? That whatever that style of rap is. That is like, you know, yeah, I was in a boy band, but everyone's always asking where the fuck is Jay, man? And it's like, oh, ABS has bloody broken his silence because he left in 2014. So it's the four of them, and then he just left. But he didn't tell the band. He just announced it on Twitter and never spoke to them again. And that's the cause of friction. And it was all quiet until he released his diss track about a year ago.
Okay, so but that's – yeah, so that's ABS doing the diss track. Jay, we don't know anything about, and Jay is who's
– Jay's a monk.
And Jay
– Jay is Luke Skywalker. He's on an island somewhere drinking green milk from a mutant cow.
So Jay then is – do you think when they perform live, Five, as the three
piece?
I'll
tell you exactly, go on.
Oh, yeah, you do know this already? Yeah. Okay, yeah. So do they do the raps, or do they just do the songs without the raps?
Scott does the raps now.
Oh,
yeah.
And how is Scott doing the raps? Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So do you think, compared to you doing the raps versus Scott doing the raps, like, do you think you're in the same vicinity?
No, Scott would definitely be better than me. I mean, the weird thing about Jay's raps is he has like this super, yeah. It's almost like a Notorious B.I.G. tone. Like he's got an American accent for a start, but he's got the same kind of, I don't know, like intonation that Biggie had. And there is one line I actually wanted to ask you about it. I wasn't going to bring it up, but you have. So let's talk about it.
No. Now,
so in that,
by the way, just for the record, we did start this conversation with you saying I'm done with Five, it's over. But anyway, let's.
Well, it's been on my mind. It's been on my mind because I. So in Everybody Get Up.
Yep. Okay.
He has the line. I'm the resident president. I'm the fifth element.
Yep.
And then he goes, Jimmy Fly, Snooker Stone, Cold's how I'm hitting them. Right, which is obviously a reference to wrestlers. Now here's my question to you. Jimmy Fly Snooker, that wasn't the wrestler's name. It was Jimmy Superfly Snooker. Jimmy Fly Snooker Stone Cold. Now obviously it doesn't fit into the kind of like rhythm of the verse. So do you accept that? Is that kind of like a Beastie Boys, like a pinch from the neck of Mr. Spock, which is nonsensical, but you're like, oh well, it sounds cool, so we'll allow it.
Yeah, I think so. And because you also know what he's talking about, regardless of
whether he gets it right or not.
Yeah, right? Like the meaning is conveyed with the words, like the fact that it isn't every single word. You're not like, oh, hang on, is he talking about that wrestler? Because he hasn't used super in the middle of this. But you still.
But I wonder if. But Jimmy Superfly Snooker was also known as Superfly Jimmy Snooker. Or could you have just said, I'll be the resident president. I'm the fifth element. Superfly Snooker Stone Cold's how I'm hitting them. You know, don't like not Jimmy Fly Snooker. So they're Superfly Snooker. And that to me would be more acceptable because you're using his kind of moniker and his surname as opposed to just getting them both wrong.
I think this was this sort of criticism that drove him away into obscurity. People picking apart his raps. He was like, I'm just sick of hearing it. I'm sick of hearing middle-aged men thinking they could do a better job of coming up with some fly raps than me.
Well, how about this? So it goes, I'm the resident president. I'm the fifth element. Jimmy Fly Snooker Stone Cold's how I'm hitting them. Better get together, put your hands in the sky. Stick them up, punk, hit them low, hit them high, which I think is a Cypress Hill reference. Stick them up, punk, hit them low, hit them high. Yeah. Now, I'm the bad boy that you invite for dinners. Ain't got no manners because I eat with my fingers. And this is my favorite bit. He goes, lost boys terrorize the neighborhood and the hounds of the Baskervilles be up to no good. Now, to me, I don't know if Jay wrote the verse, but I'm like, Hounds of the Baskervilles? Podcast, Mike, can you just Google the Hounds of the That's a Sherlock Holmes story,
right?
Yes. Oh, do you know the Hounds of the Baskervilles?
Yeah, it's a very famous Sherlock Holmes story. It's like a classic.
But what does it refer to, the Hounds of the Baskervilles? Are they a gang?
Well, I believe, no. I mean, I think the Hounds of the Baskervilles were literally dogs. Like he's talking about his dogs, you know what I mean? Like it's a double meaning about like hunting in a pack, like lost boys, you know, vampires at night, hounds in the Baskervilles. Right. You get your dogs together, like, you know, I think.
Okay. In that case, it's quite a clever reference because it's his dogs, right?
Yeah, right. That's what I'm thinking.
Lost boys terrorize the neighborhood and the hounds of the Baskervilles be up to no good. Yeah. Okay. All right. It just struck me as a kind of oddly literary.
Well, maybe it is criticism. Maybe it's his least favorite of the Sherlock Holmes stories. He's like... And the Hounds of the Baskervilles be up to no good. I like the rest of them. I've got to be honest with you.
Now, Bluesfest wasn't the only entertainment I've consumed this week, Will.
Okay.
I had one of my favorite experiences last night. I'm not sure if this is something you're a fan of, but I love a bit of amateur theatre. Although this was kind of more pro-am theatre.
I think I like amateur theatre more than I like theatre.
Pro theatre.
Like I like a musical, I like a comedy show, obviously, that sort of like live music. But like theatre, I've never seen a whole bunch of plays that I've gone, that was super amazing, even if they've been like really well-renowned plays with really great actors. But if you take it down a few levels and I can see the amateurs, you know, the humans, the people putting on the play, I find that actually much more compelling and fascinating, I've got to say.
Well, this was particularly... delightful because I didn't know that we were, I thought we were seeing professional theatre because Jem said, oh, like the Victorian Ballet are doing a show at the Byron Theatre for kids. It's the Magic Toy Box or the Magic Toy Shop or something like that, which is like an old, like old ballets, like a Russian ballet that, you know, it's been adapted. Mm-hmm. And so like, oh, let's take Iona to see some ballet. I'd never seen some ballet. Iona and I, it was both our introduction to ballet. Now, as you know, the Byron Bay Theatre, it's like a, it's not like a proper theatre. It's like a little black box theatre. Probably seats like, what, 150, mm-hmm. maybe that, 150, maybe 200. But it's one of those black box theatres where you are right on the stage. So when we turned up too, they'd done two shows. They did like a matinee and then they did like a 6 p.m. show. And again, it's for kids. And what they'd done is, so Victorian Ballet, a professional ballet school, and they had arrived in Byron with their professional troupe and then they'd supplemented it with some local, whatever the Byron or Byron Shire Ballina Ballet School is. So there was kids in there as well. And one of the things I love most about like amateur theatre is just like, you don't obviously have a budget, so you've got to try and sort of like think creatively. Now, the setting for this ballet, this play, is it's meant to be like a kind of like a late 19th century toy shop, European toy shop, like a Geppetto kind of figure. And so he makes toys and then the toys come to life and they dance around. That's the general premise of it. And so they didn't have enough money for a set, so they had a projection of like a children's book kind of toy shop against the wall. That was the dressing. And then they had some props. And they didn't really sort of commit to the period. Like you'd think, okay, well, it's a late 19th century toy store, so it'd be like marionette puppets and, you know, tin cars and that kind of stuff. No, there was an Elmo doll and like some Hulk hands. Like, you know, the most
just whatever toys, just, you know,
whatever, whatever toys. Even though everyone else is in period costume,
yeah,
and the music is clearly like classical music,
mm-hmm. But also Hulk smash,
yeah. And so then the dancers come out, and the thing I'd say about like first of all, amazing, you know, the athleticism, and they were great, but I don't think ballet is built for you to be, because in a black box theater, you're on, you know, sort of raised seating, and it's like you're on the stage, like you're very, very close to the performers. And so you can hear every pivot and turn and land of the dancers, even though they're very light on their feet and, you know, they're trained dancers. Like you're hearing, it's like being courtside, you know, the basketball.
Yeah, you're hearing them breathe and sweat and grunt and all those sort of things where you're like, this actually takes a little away from the performance when I just hear it go, oof.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, they were like extremely fit and you weren't like seeing any of that. But it was just more the scuffs and the turns and the points, because it's like you're just hearing this. So you're seeing, and they're throwing these beautiful shapes and they're in these like beautiful costumes, but you're getting all this noise. But the other thing is, because it was only half full for this late performance, they could see me. Like, you know, I'm less than 2 meters away, and so you become acutely aware of the fact that it's like when you're sitting in the front row of the airplane and they're giving the safety announcement. It's like, well, fuck, man, I don't want to. I'll get busted if I'm not paying attention. So you know, you got to pay a lot of attention. And Iona was loving it, by the way. Like, it was so great to watch, like her first year, and she was just like spellbound just watching these like dancers come out and stuff, so she was loving it. But there was a lot of kids in the crowd and at one point this kid a few rows behind me, and I think I was the only one to hear it, but he farted really loud and so I laughed because it was funny. But the problem was, at the same time that this kid farted, or mere seconds after this kid farted and I laughed, a dancer on stage made a mistake.
Oh.
And so, but she was right in front of me. And so I'm laughing and she looks up after making the mistake.
Oh, no.
And she sees me like,
and thinks you're laughing at her fucking
and thinks
up.
I'm laughing at her. Then I'm like, oh, my God. And so then I pivot the other direction. It's like, well, I now I'm just going to be the most intent.
Like, yeah, you got to
theater
just lean in. Just like, sorry, no. But now that almost like sells it more that you were laughing before, though. Like, what you really needed to just yell out was, "I'm laughing at a kid farting, not at you." Move on. Like, just clear it up.
Well, it was worse because like the performers, the dancers were predominantly like teenagers, and so it's even worse that you've got this like middle-aged guy just like staring intently at the stage. But then, so it's a two act. So after the, we come back from the second act and the performers are all great. They're sort of, well, here's the thing about ballet, right? Like a musical, there is, so it's just, it's, there's no dialogue. It's all just like, it's real big kind of hammy kind of acting. And then like a musical, when there's an excuse to sing, they just sing, it's dancing. Yeah. So it's like, oh, why tell a story with dialogue when you can just start dancing around? And so that was great for Iona because, you know, she didn't have to follow any dialogue. She could just watch the dancing. But I think sort of halfway through the second act, her energy started to lag. And then she just turned into this heckler, like this little 2.5-year-old heckler where she was sitting in her chair and just yelling stuff out that came to mind. Like you know, like I'm sure you've had this in your shows. Well, just like, dancing, or like that cut, that dress is red, you know, just like, I mean, I'm sure you've had like drunk hecklers at your shows do the same thing. I mean, just kind of non sequiturs, just yelled really loudly.
I mean, as recently as last night. So.
Oh, really? Was it podcast Mike? I know he asked you for some tickets.
It was actually, it's funny you mentioned that because podcast Mike was in. It was the last night of Willogical when we're recording this at last night. And it was like a big rowdy Saturday night crowd. And there was just a point early on where I was like, all right, I'm going to have to just like shut them up a little bit here to just like, it never got too out of control, but there was enough of, there was a couple of that dress is reds that slipped through, and I was like, no, I'm gonna have to shut this shit down. I can't spend the next 45 minutes with somebody saying, "Daddy, he's dancing."
So with that, with your hecklers, not the 2.5-year-old hecklers, do you think that predominantly it is goodwill heckling, as in, hey, I'm part of the show too?
I mean, certainly last night it was. Like it was just people who were – like the crowd had a lot of energy and they were just joining in a bit too much early on when like you, so sometimes you've then just got to go, look, I got this. I appreciate your support and that you're here to help. But to be honest with you, this is the last night and I've managed the other 2.5 weeks without you. So I can do this without your help.
I mean, you should just take the opportunity just to rip through them and then hope someone's filming it so you can get one of those YouTube clips up where it's like, Will Anderson destroys heckler, and destroys is written in all caps.
Yeah, but that involves when you say someone films it, what you mean is the comedian themselves has been filming it and then immediately rushes to YouTube to caption their own clip of them destroying a heckler.
Do you get any joy out of destroying a heckler?
Nah, not really.
Must be satisfying.
No, not really. I don't, I mean,
really?
No.
Oh, I'd love that. I would think it was like that thing where you have an argument with someone and then, you know, 5 minutes later you think of the perfect comeback. Like, because you've done this so many times, you have comebacks preloaded.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it'd be very satisfying.
No, I think it's actually the opposite, which is that there is a really disproportionate power relationship. So sometimes, like what you learn over the years is like so the other night, guy comes in front row of the audience, 35 minutes late for the show, right? So like you're more than halfway through the show at that point, and like he's sitting in the front row. So he comes and sits down, and
how late?
35 minutes.
Why even bother coming?
Well, that's what I asked, right? Like, yeah. I mean, you have to stop the show and deal with that. Like if that was happening up the back, it wouldn't matter. But because he's obviously walking in past everyone, you can't just keep doing your thing because it's distracting. So, but at the same time, I don't have time in the show to deal with that. That's why I do the improv show, you know, where I do talk to the audience, because in my regular show, I just kind of need to get to the jokes. But I've got to deal with him. And so I just, like in the old days, you might rip shreds out of him. But like these days, what you realize is the whole crowd are already on your side. They're not on his side. And even if you're just asking gentle questions, it almost feels like you're like insulting them or taking them down. Because I just, all I wanted to know was why he was late. I said, "What were you doing?" He goes, "I was at dinner." And I said, "Oh, okay, well, that's fine." He goes, "It's my birthday." And I'm like, "Okay, well, that's, you know, I'm not going to make too much fun of you." But I was like, you know, like, at least tell me that you had something nice for dinner. You know, what did you have for dinner? And he was like, "Oh, I don't know, Japanese." And I was like, "Yeah, but what specifically were you eating that was so delicious that you couldn't come to something that you clearly cared about enough that you were sitting in the front row on your birthday? Like, this isn't an accidental purchase of a ticket, right? This is, it's my birthday. I have a ticket in the front row. By the way, he had time to stop and get a drink in the foyer before he came in. So,
was he on his own or was he meeting friends?
That's a good question, actually. He sat down. I think he sat down by himself. So maybe on his birthday, he had booked himself a ticket to the show in the front row.
It's
and then,
tragic. Anyway, it's now, sad
anyway so like I said,
three
it's
remaining
like...
members of five on his own. That'll be me. That'll be me rocking up to the Rudy Hill RSL halfway through the show, and the five band members be like, "What?" Are you, the three band members would be like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm just here to do the rap verse from Everybody Get
Well,
Up."
Hang on. Maybe it is a five situation, but in reverse. Like maybe this guy isn't a fan of mine at all, but he's got an ironic fascination with my career in the same way as you've developed an ironic fascination with Five. And he's just coming along to have a bit of a weird gander so he can gossip about it on his podcast. And he's like, well, fuck it, I'll have dinner. I'll get there. I'll get the gist of it in the last 25 minutes, I'm sure.
That'd be amazing. He's like, I've just got a question. What happened to Corinne Grant? Yeah. She used to be on the Glass House. Is she like, she's not in the showbiz anymore? I've been in a rabbit hole YouTube for 3 weeks just watching everything you've ever done.
Just been in a glass house rabbit hole. Just got obsessed with the glass house. And like, I like the idea that this guy only ever watched the glass house and then has no idea what happened to any of the people involved in the glass house since. And has just recently gone back and go, oh, remember that show, The Glass House? And then he's suddenly like, you know that Will Anderson Groom was the guy from The Glass House. You know that
I've never put two and two
never
together.
Put it together. I never got you know that Husey guy from The Masked Singer. Even that's the same Husey from The Glass House. Corinne Grant's a lawyer now for human rights.
So how is the festival like? Do you think I've been seeing a lot of stuff online about, you know, people having to cancel shows, and it's actually been quite brutal for a lot of performers. Do you think the festival as a whole has been successful or? Mixed bag
is the truth. So, like just on a really personal level, thanks to everyone who did come out and see the show. It won an award, which was very nice and unexpected. I'll tell you this story very quickly. So, so yesterday morning, I'm out for my walk, and I wasn't going to go to the awards because I've just been avoiding anything where there's like other people. But I got a call about 15 minutes before. Just saying, hey, could you pop over to the awards if you're nearby? Now, that doesn't always mean that you yourself are going to win an award. It could mean that someone that you know or like is going to win an award. They'd like you to present an award, or there's some other compelling reason to be there. But it could mean that, you know. But I just couldn't work out of the awards that were available what award they would give my show. Anyway. I wasn't expecting to do anything that morning. So I'd had a little medicine and I was going for my daily walk through the city. And then I'm like, oh man, I'm going to have to like sober up a little to get, you know, to wander into this event, right? So I'm looking for a coffee and the lines are so long everywhere and I've got to get to, like, I don't have much time to get there on time to when they've told me to be there. And so I go into the 7-Eleven. I'm just like, fuck it, I'll get a 7-Eleven coffee. So $2 large 7-Eleven coffee. And I'm like, so I'm like getting myself my coffee and like, you know, making as you do in the 7-Eleven. And then I'm in my head, I'm just like going, why am I like, what's going on? Like, why am I being invited to this like thing? You know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, I don't understand what's going on. Anyway, I'm wandering over to the thing. I am almost at the awards when I realize, guess what I didn't do? Pay for my coffee. I literally just walked out of the 7-Eleven without paying for my coffee because I was just like, I'd made it. I was in my head. I kind of just forgot that I was meant to pay for the coffee. So anyway, I walked back like to the 7-Eleven. The look of surprise on the guy's face who works there, he goes, mate, people do this all the time and no one ever comes back.
So what, he's saying like – famous comedians come in and steal coffee all the time.
Tommy Little comes in, fills up a bucket, mate. I don't, it's fine. but at the awards, it was really interesting because I haven't had a huge opportunity to talk to a bunch of other comedians this festival, to get what their experiences have been. But that, obviously everybody there was just talking about the festival, so it was really interesting to get a broader perspective. And the overview, without me, knowing all of it, is that I think the numbers will be pretty consistent with what they were last year, but there was 200 more shows. So if you do the maths on that, that's a lot fewer people actually going to individual shows. Audiences seem to be about kind of a third down, I would say, like, you know, across the board, like, you know, different spikes in different spots and all those sort of things. But people, there's a lot of COVID in the community still. And because of the, you know, like if you're someone who's got a job or a family or any of those sort of things that can't afford a 7-day strike, you know, audiences stayed away. And I think in particular, the people I feel for, because at my end of the market, even if a third of your audience doesn't come, there's still heaps of people in the room to do the shows. Whereas if you're some new person doing your first, second or third show, like that's the hard ticket to sell. Like somebody might say, I'll go and see Carl Barron. I'm willing to take the risk of COVID because I want to go and see Carl Barron. I know it'll be worth going to see Carl Barron. Whereas people don't necessarily make that same decision of like, I'm going to go and see someone I've never heard of who may or may not be good in that scenario. And
which is kind of the antithesis of the festival experience, right? Like the whole point of the festival is like, yeah, sure, you see your headliners, but the idea is, oh, I'm going to see some people that I haven't heard of before.
That's
I'm going
to
like take a gamble.
And like often shows. They'll do both in the same night, whereas people have been you know, more hesitant to, you know, go from bar to bar and venue to venue. Like this year I've heard a lot of stories of people staying in the same venue for the night, for example. So if I'm going to go and see shows tonight, I'm only going to the Victoria Hotel and I'm just going to see shows at the Victoria Hotel. But so the little end of the market, and particularly when you talk about they're the ones who are more susceptible to COVID. You know, they're going to have to do more flyering, or they're in smaller rooms, less ventilated. They don't have the capacity to be, you know, separated from their audience in the way that like a show like mine does. Often their own money. They've spent like, you know, the last 3 to 6 months probably putting together their show, maybe lost a week of it through COVID, like are going to come out of this festival with thousands of dollars in debt. And so they're the ones that I like really worry for, because in the old days you would say to them, that death is worth it, because if you did a good festival show, hopefully a bunch of other comedians came and saw it and a whole bunch of comedy managers and festival staff and whatever. But again, that's the sort of stuff that didn't really happen this year. You know, like people didn't go and see other people's shows. Other performers were very hesitant even to go and see as many shows because we were all trying to be protective to not get sick. So it was a really mixed bag festival. Like it was super successful in some ways. I mean, for me, it's my favorite ever show that I've ever done. And I thought it was just, I loved the shows and I loved the people who came along, and I can't wait to do it in Sydney and Brisbane. And, you know, when we talk, I'm doing my improv show tonight, like to finish off the festival. So last night was actually my last night of Willogical. And yeah, I loved it. Like I love being back doing the festival. I love doing the shows. Like, and I think generally, the thing I said to people was, if you were actually someone who was coming out to see shows, you probably saw the best quality shows you've ever seen at the festival, because A, all the comedians weren't drinking, they weren't staying out all night. Like no one's done comedy for so long that you, like in a long festival, sometimes you will phone in a show. You get to a Wednesday and the crowd's not into it and you're like, I'll just get through tonight. But nobody's doing that at the moment. Like everyone's like, because every night at the festival when there's COVID around could be your last night. Like I went into every single night of this festival going, tonight could be the last night I get to do this show, which is, so I think the actual shows themselves, the festival itself, the bit of it that happened and was supported was probably really super successful. A lot of great shows, a lot of audiences that had a really good time. And then there was this sort of other part of the festival, which was the struggles that were consistent across the board. So it'll just be interesting to know whether this is what it's going to be like going forward. Like is 2023 going to be the same as what 2022 is, or do we hope that, you know, by 2023 maybe we'll get a clearer run at it? But it was a challenge, but a beautiful, interesting challenge, and it was really good that the festival was about.
You know what is also really good, Will? Tofop.com, where you can find all our podcasts. That's sorry, I was trying to find a segue out of that. I couldn't.
No,
I was thinking, mate, I hope he finishes on a positive note so I can find a positive segue into plugging our website. But you can go to tofop.com to check out our other great podcast. I've got Guy Davis. Oh, should we explain what happened with Cameron James, or is that also involved?
All I will say is that we spoke about something that it turns out someone involved wasn't happy with us speaking about. So we decided out of respect for everybody to just take down the whole episode. And
at some point,
it's not a big deal.
At some point we may put it up again.
Yeah. Hopefully at some point, or at the very least, we'll have Cam back on and we can, you know,
just talk about
most of the same things and maybe sidestep around a couple of things.
We should get a transcript from the show.
All I would say is download it early, guys. If you ever want to avoid this situation, as soon as the new episodes come out, you just download them and then you'll never miss out.
Can we get a transcript of the show? Because I think we can do that on Riverside. It does automatic transcriptions, and we can get you and Cam just to do everything apart from the redacted sections, so we can just like beep out the bits that you're not meant to talk about.
Well, the thing I will say, and I'm not going to blow up Cam's spot in any way, like, you know, which is that he's been really great about like healing the, you know, the hurt that was done. You know what I mean? Like, as in, like, he's been very professional about, like, you know, explaining, you know, anyway, like, he doesn't need to have me defend him, because of course I'm the opposite. Like, I'm always like, I'm going to tell them to get fucked and I'm going to say this. And I'm like running through this list of like arguments of why, you know, and then I'm like, no, just, you know, let it go. Well,
this week's guest on FOFOP is a far less controversial Robert Davis, film critic, TV critic, pop culture critic, is back on the show. We're talking about the career of Bruce Willis. Don't worry, it's not a eulogy. It's more of an affectionate look back at the career of Bruce Willis. We bring up some of our favourite, perhaps underrated, Bruce Willis performances. See if you can guess my one, Will, or one of mine. Underrated. Not a John McClane, not a Hudson Hawk.
Oh, not a Hudson Hawk. Hudson Hawk was maybe going to be my guess. Looper.
Oh, that comes up. That's not one of mine. That was one of Guy's. Yes, yes.
Okay.
Think early 90s comedy, high concept comedy.
High concept
playing, comedy. It's Bruce playing against type. He's in fact
was
not
he in like a Robert Altman film or something
no,
like that.
Robert is it
like
Zemeckis, the player a Robert or something? Zemeckis film. He's not actually the lead. He's kind of almost like a supporting character, playing a real nerd.
Okay, playing a nerd. Oh, is it that 9 to 5 or
no.
whatever it's called?
No, 9 to 5. That was made by Daniel Hillier.
No.
Death becomes it.
Like
death becomes
it. Okay, that wasn't. It wasn't what I was thinking about anyway. There was some sort of like romantic comedy where he's like, I mean, it might not, anyway, whatever, doesn't matter.
So that's FOFOP, that comes out on Tuesday. And then on Wednesday, New Two Guys One Cup will be out on the Listener app. So download the Listener app for free, sign up for free and search Two Guys One Cup to hear that episode. Let's just get one bit of mail before we, oh, and also on our Patreon, bonus app coming up this week. We're going to record it as soon as we finish this episode. Just a quick bit of mail. This is from Megan. Or Megan, as I say in America. Hi, Will and Charlie. I've been listening to you since the beginning of time, or what feels like that. Hey, that's some perfect symmetry. We started the show talking about how time feels kind of like irrelevant.
It's a circle.
It's a circle.
It's a circle.
I came here for Will. I've been crushing on him since the Glasshouse days. Oh, bloody hell, more callbacks.
Oh, my
this is amazing.
God.
But I stay for Charlie. I'm a stay-at-home mum of a
and
two.
And the John Stevens references. Oh, my God.
The five chat. I'm a stay-at-home mum of a two-year-old girl, so I find Charlie's stories hilariously relatable. Mm-hmm. We are loving Bluey as well. I wanted to ask you both, if you were a breed of dog, which would you be? Will, I presume you'd say a bulldog for obvious reasons, but I don't think your personality matches. Okay, so what dog do you think you'd be?
I mean, by the way, Byron Bay Bluey Fest, you should get behind that. Like a children's late festival dedicated to the TV character Bluey in Byron Bay.
Yeah.
Byron Bay Bluey Fest. In fact, you should run that as part of Byron Bay Blues Fest next year to look after the kids.
Yeah,
that's what you
that's
do.
That's a great idea.
You get all the kids down there. You get them down to Byron Bay Bluey Fest where it's all just like stuff from Bluey, like Blues Fest in the corner. That's an idea for free, guys.
It'd be amazing to see some jacked up stereosonic guy pick a fight with Sam at Bluey Fest. That'd be amazing. 2 years in a row? Jesus Christ.
That guy just tell you to get your hands off banjo?
Banjo bandit.
Oh, sorry.
You're not a real fan.
I've never seen Bluey. I've never seen an episode. I don't know.
What dog are you?
What dog am I? I don't know.
Physically, I think you've got like a Dalmatian or like a greyhound. You got like their long features. Like I could see like a border collie, something like that. I mean, you're long.
I mean,
So
yeah, bad hips. Like there's a lot of dogs that have, you know, dysplasia. Bad hips. So dysplasia. So like, yeah, so probably a big dog, not like a small dog. But
Great
not
Dane?
Like a
Could
big...
you be a Great Dane? You like just sitting around on things and watching TV.
I mean, I do. Yeah, it's true.
Well, I remember when Gemma and I first started dating early on, we were at a party and the owners of the party, they had this staffy, this like little chunky little staffy. And I remember talking to someone, quite a serious conversation, D&M, and Gem comes charging into the room with this staffy, holding it up and going, look, look, don't you reckon this dog looks just like Charlie? So I'd have to say, I do have that kind of staffy energy. I've got this sort of big smile and the kind of like stocky little body and the sort of big head. So yeah, I think a staffy and a Great Dane, that is the dogs that we are. And that is Tofop for this week. Check out the bonus episode at patreon.com/Tofop. I'm Charlie Clawson.
I'm Will Anderson.
Yeah, I'm Will Anderson.
How long? Not long. Everyone relax.
Fucking stupid.
This podcast is a Tofop production.
Head to tofop.com for more
cool things for cool people.